Hello, this is Kess with the Herald and Review dated November 25th. We'll begin today's reading with the article headlined "Macon County Seeks to Continue Juvenile Partnership with Peoria County" by Ryan Voiles. Decatur. Macon County will continue what officials are calling its successful partnership with Peoria County to house juvenile criminal suspects. A plan that would continue the relationship between the two counties was passed unanimously Tuesday after the Macon County Justice Committee, with a final vote needed at the meeting of the full Macon County Board next month. Per the agreement, Peoria County would have 5 reserved bed spaces at its juvenile detention center to house juveniles from Macon County. Macon County will pay $224,706 to cover the costs of the 5 guaranteed beds and for transportation costs for one officer. Each individual bed is rented at a rate of $123.12 per day. Macon County would also have to pay $18 an hour for detainee transports that would require a second officer. Patrick Berter, director of the Macon County Probation and Court Services, said the relationship between the two counties, which has been in place since the start of 2014, has been beneficial for both. "We've been really successful working alongside them," he said. "We're very lucky, honestly, to have them. So far, there have been 86 juveniles housed this year in Peoria and Champaign counties, with the latter accepting juveniles when necessary." Although the number of juveniles is higher than last year, Berter said the county has actually had to pay less this year due to fewer juveniles facing serious charges that require them to be in detention centers. "It is not uncommon last year for the number of juveniles in detention centers to be in double digits, which would cost the county upwards of $60,000 a month, to house all of them. As of now," Berter said, "there are 8 Macon County juveniles in Peoria County, with 6 of them facing charges of murder or attempted murder. If approved by the full county board, the new contract would start January 1st and cover the full year." In education, Dennis School Has a Monster Book Fair, by Valerie Wells. Decatur. Last year, the celebration of a successful scholastic book fair was a jousting tournament among the staff at Dennis School, much to the delight of the students, who unabashedly took sides. This year, in Principal Matt Andrews' deepest movie announcer voice, it was the 2015 Scare Games. "Look at this," Andrews said to parent volunteer Beth Creighton, who organized the event and ordered a Sully costume, one of the characters from Monsters, Inc., for Andrews to wear. "It was a bit small. I ordered extra large," she said. "What do you want me to do?" For the actual games, Andrew changed into a t-shirt emblazoned with "Maddie Matt and the Funky Bunch," the name of his team. Teachers and staff were in teams of 4 each. Andrew's team had a cheering section that even made a big shiny sign to cheer them on, and the Funky Bunch entered the gym like prize fighters to a soundtrack. Not to be outdone, the Dirty Monster Wranglers, led by teacher Keith Creighton in a multicolored monster hat, danced through the gym. The first game was musical chairs, and it came down to Andrews and the Wranglers member Devin Logue, who beat her principal again. "She's my nemesis," Andrews said afterward, laughing. "She beat me at jousting last year, too." Indeed, the Wranglers won the day, beating the other teams at almost every one of the games, which included rubbing butter on their faces and then trying to pick up Fruit Loops on their faces, shooting Skittles candies into a bucket with their noses, and a two-person competition with giant pieces of dry cereal, which had to be dipped in water and tossed into a bucket on their teammate's head. "We are here to make a hideous fools of ourselves," said Laura Turner, a special education teacher. Her team was Keep Calm and Turn Up. The goal for sales for this year's Scholastic Book Fair was 750 books, and sales exceeded 850, Andrews said. That meant that the teachers each received a stack of new books for their classroom libraries, a total of 197 new books. The final Scare Games event required the players to choose an egg from a carton and smash it on their heads. Some eggs were raw and some were hard-boiled, and there was no way to know which was which until they'd already chosen. Several of them, including Andrews, ended up with an egg on their faces, in their hair, and all over everything. "That was awesome," Andrews said. And there's an image of a of pre-K teacher Lindsay Irwin participating in a contest among school staff trying to get the highest number of Fruit Loops to stick on their butter-covered faces during an assembly rewarding students for successful scholastic book fair at Dennis School. Crime and courts. Southside Country Club office manager arrested in theft case. Decatur, by Tony Reed. The former office manager of the Southside Country Club in Decatur is accused of stealing more than $47,000 from the club and allegedly told police she had gambled most of it away. Janet R. Terillian, 54, was arrested Friday evening and booked on a charge of theft over $10,000. She remained in the Macon County Jail on Tuesday night in lieu of posting a $10,000 bond. If she makes bail, she has been ordered to stay away from the club. Sworn police statements stated Terillian took over as office manager in February, and by the summer, the club's board was becoming suspicious of the new manager's activities. Ronald Grigg, a member of the club board, told police the board had stopped receiving monthly financial statements, as had been normal practice previously. Grigg advised that they brought back the old office manager to help straighten out the account, the statements noted. Grigg said that during this time, Janet then admitted to stealing from the club. Grigg also said there was another $2,400 missing, which the club suspected was also stolen but could not yet prove. Michelle Eaton, the former office manager, called in to assess what was going on, said Terillian had asked to speak with her privately, and admitted the theft. Janet did not go into great detail about this, but advised that the money she took ranged from cash from the fundraiser events, credit card charges, and extra payroll checks, according to the statements. Later interviewed by police, Terillian reported that she had planned to pay the money back when she received a divorce settlement that had not come through yet. She said she didn't know how much she had taken, but figured it was about $20,000. Janet advised that she did not necessarily need the money that she took, the statements added. Janet said that she gambled most of the money she stole during her tenure at the Southside Country Club. Local briefs. Decatur. Thanksgiving closings. Federal, state, county, city, and park district offices, public schools, and Richland Community College will be closed Thursday, November 26 in observance of Thanksgiving Day. Federal offices, including the U.S. Postal Service, will reopen Friday, November 27th, as will Scoville Golf Course and Decatur Indoor Sports Center. But the other government offices, including Decatur Park District Administrative Offices and the Poage Arts and Recreation Center, will remain closed. Illinois Secretary of State driver services facilities that normally are open Tuesday through Saturday, such as Decatur, will reopen Saturday, November 28th. The Decatur Public Library will be closed Thursday, but will have normal hours Friday and Saturday. Decatur Public Transit System buses will not run Thursday, but will resume regular operations Friday. Herald and Review business offices will be closed Thursday and Friday, but the newspaper will be published as usual. Bloomington. Zimmerman out of jail. Kirk Zimmerman, charged with murder in the death of his ex-wife more than a year ago, was released on bond early Tuesday afternoon after posting $200,025. Zimmerman, 57, of Bloomington, had been jailed since July on charges that he killed Pamela Zimmerman in November 2014. The Bloomington financial planner accountant was found in her Bloomington office with 4 gunshot wounds. Zimmerman's 3 children, his brother, and his girlfriend waited for him to be processed about 1 p.m. Tuesday at the McLean County Jail. As part of the terms of his release, Zimmerman was outfitted with an electronic monitoring device before he returned to his Bloomington home. His travel is limited to medical and legal appointments. His next court appearance is in January. Altamont, Dr. Wright's house. Christmas trees at Dr. Wright's house will be 1 to 4 p.m. Saturdays, November 28th and December 5th, and Sundays, November 29th and December 6th, in the Dr. Charles M. Wright House Museum. Guests will tour 18 rooms with a decorated tree in each. Adult admission is $6 and students are $1. For information, visit www.wrightmansion.org, and that's all one word, Wright Mansion, WRIGHTMANSION.org. Mattoon. Firefighters deliver dinners. On Tuesday morning, Mattoon firefighters delivered 189 Thanksgiving food baskets to local households in financial need. Engineer paramedic Bart Owen, who is a chairman of the food basket program, said the firefighters have made these deliveries of Thanksgiving dinner fixings every year for more than a decade. He said the program serves those who live in Mattoon city limits and adjacent subdivisions. The firefighters raise money for the program and then use 100% of the donations to purchase the groceries for the baskets, Owen said. These supplies are purchased from locally owned Mark's My store in Mattoon. Owen said they provide large baskets containing turkeys, side dishes, rolls, and desserts for families, and small baskets containing turkey legs and other groceries for smaller households. He said this enables firefighters to stretch the money and serve more people in need. Mawiqua, Christmas on Main. Christmas on Main will open the holiday season on Saturday, November 28th in downtown Mawiqua. The celebration will begin with the Boy Scout breakfast from 6 to 10 a.m. Other events will begin at 10 a.m., including the fun run and parade, photo opportunities with Santa, a live reindeer, and Olaf the Snowman or Dr. Seuss's The Grinch. The downtown area will be decorated with holiday items, including adorned light poles from the decorated pole contest. Crime in courts. Man accused of leaving woman unconscious at accident site. By Huey Freeman. Decatur. Brandon M. Peppers, who recently served a 2-year prison sentence for aggravated battery in a sexual assault case, was arraigned Tuesday on a felony charge in connection with an incident in which he drove away from an unconscious woman in an alley after flipping her off the vehicle. About 2:30 a.m. November 4th, Peppers, 23, was driving a vehicle in the alley just south of the 900 block of West Sawyer Street with a 24-year-old woman in the front passenger seat. After Peppers parked the vehicle and forced the woman from it, she climbed from the side of the vehicle in an attempt to prevent the vehicle from leaving her or to regain entry, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Justin Ziller. As the woman clung to the vehicle, Peppers drove away at about 10 miles per hour and then came to a sudden stop. The woman fell from the vehicle, striking her head on the right side view mirror, breaking off the mirror. The victim was knocked unconscious. Peppers left the scene and never reported the incident to the police, Ziller wrote in his statement. The victim was found approximately half an hour later, still unconscious. Peppers, who lists his address in the 800 block of West Sawyer Street, was arrested Thursday and booked into the Macon County Jail, where he is being held on a $15,000 bond. He was arraigned on one count of leaving the scene of an accident resulting in personal injury, a Class 2 felony punishable by 3 to 7 years in prison. Peppers is listed on the Illinois Murder and Violent Offender Against Youth Registry in connection with his prior conviction. He was charged in May 2011 with criminal sexual assault, aggravated battery, and domestic battery for forcibly raping a 15-year-old girl and kicking her in the knee, rendering her unable to walk, in an incident that occurred 3 months earlier, according to court documents. In a plea deal, Peppers pleaded guilty to the aggravated battery in exchange for a 24-month probation term. As a result of subsequent probation violation, he was sentenced to a 2-year prison term February 21, 2013. Judge ordered that the recording be made public by Wednesday. Moments before the footage was released, Tuesday evening, the mayor and the police chief appealed for calm. People have a right to be angry. People have a right to protest. People have a right to free speech. But they do not have a right to criminal acts, Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy said. The relevant portion of the video runs for less than 40 seconds and has no audio. Laquan McDonald, 17, swings into view on a 4-lane street where police vehicles are stopped in the middle of the roadway. As he jogs down the street, he appears to pull up his pants and then slows to a brisk walk, veering away from the two officers who are emerging from a vehicle and drawing their guns.
And this is Kathy now turning to the front page. Richland preparing changes while waiting for state funding. Richland Community College has identified most of the changes it plans to implement if it continues to not receive about $2.5 million in expected state funding. Richland Chief of Staff Lisa Gregory said Tuesday that employees have been notified of the changes as cuts and a tuition increase will go into effect for the spring semester. We don't know what the state will do, Gregory said. We're looking at places for cost savings and reorganization to maintain providing a quality education for students. These are unprecedented times to be forced to make these types of changes. Some of the changes without a state budget agreement, such as suspending monetary award program or MAP funding for the spring semester, adult education classes at the end of the year, Department of Corrections programs at the end of the year, and all non-essential travel were discussed last week during the monthly Board of Trustees meeting. We simply can't do that, spring semester, Gregory said, about floating the money for the prison programs while not receiving reimbursements from the state. Richland President Gail Saunders said the goal is to remain operating without creating a deficit. She said the programs would be reinstated should a state budget be approved, but colleges aren't expecting to be reimbursed retroactively for money that is spent without an agreed-upon budget. Saunders said the current outlay of funds by Richland for those services is more than $1.2 million so far and not sustainable after December 31st without state reimbursement. She said all affected employees have been notified of the cuts or changes expected to be made effective December 31st. Gregory said further details about Richland's budget situation were released this week to all college's employees. Among the changes is administrative restructuring following the departure of Business and Technology Division Dean Jack Adwell, who plans to retire December 1st. Adwell's position is among those not being filled, with a hiring freeze in place for all non-essential positions that are or will become vacant, Gregory said. The hiring freeze is expected to save the college more than $300,000, she said. As a result of not filling Adwell's position, Business and Technology Division faculty will be redistributed to other disciplines, with three other deans receiving additional responsibilities and their divisions receiving new titles. The transitions reflect structural opportunities for collaboration, Gregory said. Adwell's retirement comes as the Richland Foundation has raised nearly $3 million toward its goal of $5 million to help in the development of the Carroll School of Business, Foundation Executive Director Richard McGowan told the board last week. A push is being made toward receiving year-end giving contributions to the campaign, McGowan said. Some work on the project could start early next year, he said. We want to start showing results for their contributions, McGowan said. We can show we're making progress by starting work. We can direct visual attention to show that this is going to become a reality. The goal for the business school fundraising is to improve facilities, curriculum, technology, and partnerships, with a focus on enhancing the education of business students. As part of the administrative restructuring, Doug Brower will provide the leadership for the development of the Carroll School, in addition to adding direct supervision of other departments, Gregory said. Brower is Richland's Vice President of Economic Development and Innovative Solutions. Gregory said other changes to Richland's budget include immersing partners in education activities into the workload of student success staff, headed by Vice President Marcus Brown. Partners in Education will no longer be a component organization of Richland, Gregory said. Federally funded Perkins grants with state matches will be frozen, Gregory said. She said that change will affect equipment for career and technical education programs. Starting in the spring semester, the college is planning a reduction in art gallery staff and hours, reducing supply and outside service accounts, and reducing hours for its extension centers in Fairview Park Plaza and Clinton, the Mathematics Enrichment Center, and some on-campus offices or service centers. The details of these reductions are still being worked out and will be announced later, Gregory said. Other areas with potential for savings include limiting holiday events and food activities not provided by the Richland Foundation, maximizing class schedule efficiencies, evaluating the employee health insurance program, and suspending tuition waiver giveaways. Some of the changes are things that Gregory said Richland administrators look at every year, but the uncertainty of not receiving state funding puts the pressure on to make more noticeable changes than usual. Richland has only received about $162,000 of its planned allocation from the state as of October 31st. Gregory said Richland receives about 14% of its funding from the state, which is less than some other colleges, but it is trying to operate 5 months into the state's fiscal year without the predictability from a budget. The college considers unappropriated state funding is being spent at an unsustainable rate, as nearly 90% of the projected state budget has already been expended. No state funds have been received since July 1st, and no appropriations to community colleges are expected until a state budget is approved. The portion of its funding that can be controlled locally is tuition, which the board voted last year to raise $5 per credit hour across numerous categories. The tuition increase is expected to generate approximately $100,000 in additional revenue, Gregory said. Community colleges also receive funding from local property taxes. Gregory said students receiving MAP grants should visit with financial aid staff. We will work through financial aid with each student and look closely for supplemental funding, Gregory said. We want to make sure that no student has to leave school because they can no longer afford it. Those on Richland's campus this fall have already noticed construction on the state-funded Student Success Center being stopped until a state budget is in place. Community Gathers to Give Thanks by Chris Lisvardi. Looking back on the year, Tuesday during the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce annual Community Thanksgiving Luncheon is something Decatur Mayor Julie Moorwolf considers a time-honored tradition. Moorwolf said during the traditional For This We Give Thanks address at the Decatur Civic Center, the community has many things to be thankful for, which helps when it faces adversity. Many organizations within the community currently face uncertain budgetary situations, she said. I know we have challenges, Moorwolf said. We have faced challenges before and emerged stronger and better off. Many of the people from groups and businesses helping to move Decatur forward was evident at the head table, where new leaders, Chamber Award winners, and businesses investing in the city among those recognized. Investments are being made throughout the city, Moorwolf said. Park Warehouses, Union Iron, and Fuyeo Glass are among the companies expanding and remodeling, she said. Moorwolf said Millikan University is starting a major construction project and the lakefront is continuing to change. Convey Health Solutions has brought more than 300 jobs to Decatur, Moorwolf said. The Midwest Inland Port continues to be viewed as a game changer as Decatur becomes a leading transportation hub and the dredging of Lake Decatur continues, she said. We are building for the future, Moorwolf said. Moorwolf noted three leaders who died this year but helped to make Decatur stronger during their lifetimes. She said Oasis Day Center Director Nancy Rudy, Herald and Review Community News Editor Bob Falstrom, and Mayor Mike McElroy should be remembered for their contributions to the community. McElroy, who is recognized with a mural in downtown Decatur, helped put Decatur in the position it is now in, Moorwolf said. So much of what we celebrate today started with his leadership, Moorwolf said. The city is in the midst of a transformation. Moorwolf mentioned another leader, Gail Saunders, who was at the head table for the last time as Richland Community College president. She plans to retire in the spring. She has changed the face of Richland, Moorwolf said. Decatur should also be recognized for its giving spirit, most notably raising 1,271,000 pounds of food for the community food drive, making it the nation's largest of its kind, Moorwolf said. She said that shows how the impossible can be turned into reality. The luncheon followed a similar format to what it has for the past 63 years. Service club members helped to serve the meal and decorate for the event. Volunteer spirit is one of the first things many newcomers notice when they first come to this community, Chamber Board Chairman Gretchen Murphy said. Those who have attended many of the luncheons were among those recognized, along with military veterans. John Wassum of Decatur said he has attended all 63 of the events that earned him a seat at the table. He's part of what makes the community special, Rothrock said. The head table was decorated with canned goods, which Murphy said will be donated to the Northeast Community Fund and Good Samaritan Inn. The Millikan University Choir performed during the event as it prepares for the annual Vespers concerts, which will be held on December 5th and 6th. And from the front page by Justin Pritchard, Thanksgiving travel, cheap gas, but terrorism fears. That other Thanksgiving tradition, congested highways and jammed airports, is getting underway with gas prices low and terrorism fears high. An estimated 46.9 million Americans are expected to take a car, plane, bus, or train at least 50 miles from home over the long holiday weekend, according to the motoring organization AAA. That would be an increase of more than 300,000 people over last year and the most travelers since 2007. Among the reasons given for the increase, an improving economy and the cheapest gasoline for this time of the year since 2008. On Tuesday, some travelers were gearing up for an early exit. There's a little bit of a tie-up here, but I'm sure once we get going, things will be great, Mark Sullivan said as he awaited at New York's Port Authority bus terminal. He was traveling to see family in Springfield, Massachusetts. Anyone trekking to a major airport should factor in 50 extra minutes on the road, according to the traffic date company INRIX, and that's just getting to the airport, never mind getting through security. Though there have been no changes to the nation's terror alert status, the recent attacks in Paris, West Africa, and elsewhere prompted the State Department to warn American travelers about the risks overseas. On Tuesday, the head of the Transportation Security Administration, Peter Neffinger, boasted that the U.S. has the world's best aviation security and assured the public that TSA is taking every measure to protect the millions of air travelers in the coming weeks. At the Phoenix airport, Terry Roberts said the notion of flying from Arizona to West Virginia to see family gave her pause, but in the end, she decided she had to go. "I'm not going to let the terror alerts and things stop me, because then they win," she said. Airfares have increased just 69 cents on the average since last year, according to the Airlines Reporting Corporation, which processes ticket transactions for airlines and travel agencies. In this little piece of state news, lawsuit challenges Illinois' ban on marijuana campaign money. Two libertarian political candidates have asked a federal court to declare unconstitutional an Illinois ban on political contributions from the state's new medical marijuana industry. The candidates, Claire Ball of Addison and Scott Schluter of Marion, filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Chicago last week in which they say they support marijuana legalization and want to solicit campaign donations from marijuana businesses. Illinois law bars such contributions. Ball is running for state comptroller. Schluter is running for state representative in Southern Illinois' 117th district. They argue that banning campaign donations from marijuana businesses infringes on the First Amendment's guarantee of free speech, citing, among other cases, the U.S. Supreme Court's 2010 decision in the case known as Citizens United. The lawsuit acknowledges that preventing corruption is a legitimate reason for governments to restrict campaign donations. However, it says medical cannabis cultivars and producers are not singularly more corrupting than similarly situated individuals. The lawsuit names Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan and members of the Illinois Board of Elections. The office has until December 10th to respond to the lawsuit, Madigan spokeswoman Annie Thompson said on Tuesday. The ban on political contributions was among concessions sponsors made to pass the bill in 2013, said the former coordinator of the Illinois program. In hindsight, several aspects of the Illinois Medical Cannabis Pilot Program Act went too far and included unnecessary restrictions on the industry, such as requiring patient fingerprinting, severely limiting the qualifying medical conditions, and prohibiting political participation, said Bob Morgan, an attorney at Mutch Shellist in Chicago. This new lawsuit will clarify whether the prohibition was ever constitutional in the first place. Ball and Schluter are represented by attorneys with the Liberty Justice Center in Chicago and the Pillar of Law Institute in Washington. Illinois now has 15 medical marijuana cultivation centers authorized to grow the plant for legal sales. Nearly a dozen marijuana dispensaries have active licenses, and 3,300 patients have been approved for the program. The Medical Cannabis Alliance of Illinois, an industry group, hasn't had a chance to consider the lawsuit, said spokeswoman Kim Morial McAuliffe. And from DeKalb, NIU removes Bibles from campus hotel. Bibles can no longer be found in the rooms of Northern Illinois University's campus hotel after a secular group complained it had no place in the nightstands. The Chicago Tribune reports Freedom From Religious Foundation co-president Annie Laurie Gaylor found a Bible in the drawer when she visited the campus last month for a speech sponsored by the Secular Student Alliance. The foundation's lawyer wrote a letter to Holmes Student Center director requesting that the Bibles be removed. Gaylor says a Bible and a bedside table is proselytizing in the privacy of a room a guest probably paid a lot of money for. University spokesman Brad Hoy says the student center removed the Bibles immediately. He added the university officials are very conscious of the separation of church and state. And that's all we have time for in this first half. Please stay tuned. The second half will be starting up in a couple of moments.